Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Welcome to another Coach and Coordinator Podcast. On today's show, we are continuing our Best of Deliberate Practice series, this time focusing on special teams. These are units that sometimes may get overlooked during your weekly game planning and practice sessions, but are really key and often can help flip the outcome of games. Similar to the offensive and defensive additions, we pulled clips that focus on some very specific drills you can do to improve different facets of each of your special teams units. Most teams practice special teams a little more frequently during training camp than during the regular season, so we hope that some of these drills will help your team. Also, just a quick note, you'll hear a swoosh sound periodically throughout the podcast. That sound means we are switching from one clip to the next and jumping to a new conversation. So let's take it over to myself and Andy Ryland, who is the manager of education and training at USA Football, for this special Best of Deliberate Practice Special Teams Edition.
This week, we're focusing on the punt cover and thinking about different ways we can practice that. And, you know, if you go back to when you played in high school, Andy, I'm sure you remember this. Our special teams was essentially getting out there and running full 11-on-11 drills to get this done. And really, we need to think of special teams just like we do any other scheme or position on the field. We want to break that down and take some individual time. And I think, let's say we have 10 minutes set aside to do punt and punt cover, that maybe we want to spend 5 minutes repping the individual techniques and then putting it together at the end. So today we've kind of focused on those cover guys after the kick and reacting in space, because, you know, ultimately we work those drills a lot of times. Again, you might go down the lane, you might do some of this on air to make sure everybody's there, but there's going to be things that happen along the way. Those spaces are going to change. What right now might be a 5 yards on one side and 5 yards on the other might be the responsibility I have to cover as we converge on a receiver, on a punt returner. Somebody might get picked off and blocked, and now I might have a 10-foot gap on that side or 10-yard gap on that side to cover. So we want to, just like on defense, keep that integrity of the coverage and deal with bigger lanes. Andy, what kind of ideas do you have to set up that VDA, vision decision action process for covering punts?
Yeah, you used the term right there for me, but the guys get picked off. It's part of special teams, and we need to be prepared for it. So kind of our picked off drill is we want to work with three players, you know, by position. It can be the guys that are going to fill lanes next to each other. We'll obviously want our wings and tight ends, you know, working out more outside on the field, and our middle guys working in the middle of the field. But we set up a drill where we have three cover guys, and then we place one blocker normally around 10 yards away from them, and then the returner maybe 10 yards behind him. So we're looking at about 20-yard space. We're mimicking some special teams coverage, but we're definitely not chasing a 40-yard punt downfield, trying to save the legs, trying to do all those things. So on the coach's go call, our three cover guys are going to engage in their coverage downfield. We pretended like they've already made their block. The ball's already been kicked. Now, our blocker is actually going to come forward, and he's going to choose randomly. Coach can assign it, or we can just let the players choose it on their own to really mix it up, really challenge decision-making. We never know what's going to happen, and he's going to block one of those guys. Now, I like to do this as a non-collision drill because this is about coverage lanes. It's not about block defeat. So whichever of our cover guys our blocker picks off, that guy's just going to stop. He's out of the drill, which means now we have two cover guys to fill three lanes. Now, that's very realistic. You think about somebody's going to get hung up on the line of scrimmage. Somebody's going to get caught up in the wash of the punt block, and he's not going to get out quickly enough. So now those two cover guys are going to have to see where is the open space, and we're going to have to start bending our lanes a little bit to bias that space and take up out of the space. So again, if we pick off the guy, we'll say on the far right, now my middle and left guy, if they see that opening, they're going to have to bias that. They're going to have to know that there is a big gap there, and I can't let that receiver, the returner, just run through that gap. So I'm going to need to lean my coverage lane that way until I see those guys start reengaging. Now, do we want them to run all the way in and fill up the other player's lane? No, we don't, because we're expecting that guy to get off the block at some point and come add to the party late. But I want to lean that way, so if the receiver tries to shoot that gap, I'm at least in a position to squeeze it down and make the play. If he picks off the middle player, now our two outside guys have to realize there's a huge hole between us. As they start to see the space between them, they're going to have to realize, can I make a tackle if this guy steps on the gas and hits it right up through that hole? If I can't, I'm, again, may need to lean my lane just a couple yards, right? Not enough to throw off our whole defensive spacing, but lean inside enough that if he hits the middle, I can make the play. Repeat the same process on the left. Left guy's gone. We have to lean our lanes that way. One of the reasons I really like this drill is because with the randomness of not knowing which way or who the blocker is going to pick off and not knowing where the ball carrier is going to go, because we give him some freedom. He could try to run outside, or he could try to run through the middle, or he could try to run inside. Obviously, we'll have a drill space marked off so he can't run all the way across the field. But within that drill space, he has complete freedom to try to win. And I think that's really important. We talk a lot about competitive tag, where we always want our offensive players to try to win so the defense gets or special teams player gets a realistic look of what it's going to look like. Now we're fitting gaps. Not only will this teach the guys about leaning towards the lanes, but there'll also be a lot of self-discovery about each player. You know, how far can I really cover? I'm not as fast as the guy next to me. I might need to split the difference and cheat a little farther than a really quick guy who won't need to cheat as far. That self-discovery and understanding one's abilities only comes to fruition if we're getting a full-speed look by a fast, quick athlete that's really going to mimic what we suppose the opponent's returner is going to be capable of. We expect him to be a fast, quick guy. So now in the game situation, when these guys get picked off, when somebody trips and falls down during the punt rush or the escape, we're fine. We can fill the lanes with six. We can fill the lanes with five. We can fill the lanes as needed and still find a good spread, quality relationships between the players next to me. Just like I talked about on the defensive side, our ability to be in phase with the players next to us is going to provide that nice solid net that we need. So it's a fun drill. It adds some dynamics.
Wendy, I do think it becomes a fun drill. It's definitely a lot more fun than running down the field and covering punts, you know, 40 yards down the field, five or seven times in a 10-minute period. And it breaks down that skill in a way that we get more reps out of it. We get our players to understand exactly what we're trying to accomplish. And we can put it back together in the end on some of those reps that we get. Throughout this segment, I did hear you kind of bring in those buzzwords, the brevity code, that's going to help communicate with your players what they're doing. You know, we certainly don't want to be on the field giving dissertations on what you did right or wrong, but we want words to create meaning. And you shared some of those. I'll let you go ahead and review them.
Yeah, so obviously, we bring in some stuff from earlier in the punt, so release and run. Once our guys disengage the block, release and run, that's going to start the drill. You know, I talk about we want to bend that course, and for me, that just talks about us altering our initial line of run. We want to lean the lane, and that's a bit conceptual, but it's going to be us slightly cheating towards the lane that has been vacated. So bend is the individual player action of changing his line. Lean the lane is us defensively thinking, I'm going to cheat my aim point, my landmark, to make sure I'm covering that spot. You heard me say it about blitzes and stunts, and I'll say it here on defensive special teams. We have to be in phase. In phase to me means we are connected to our teammates. We want to be connected both left and right. We also want to be connected horizontally on the field. If we get too far apart, either in spacing or if we get gaps in our coverage because of speed differences, we create seams to run through. So we want to be in phase and connected. And then finally, any defensive play where we're going to make a tackle, we have to be able to transition from that high hip sprint mechanics covering down the field into our power position. So we're going to come to balance. We're going to reestablish that base. We're going to reestablish that low hip level. So we're going to come to balance out of that sprint and be prepared for the contact situations. So when executing the pickoff drill, we're looking at release and run, bend, lean the lane, stay in phase, and then come to balance.
When we look at this idea of confidence, one area where I think we need a player who's extremely confident, and in doing so, in developing that player, we're going to get some of that hidden yardage, and that's the punt returner. That punt returner, at the very least, needs to be able to catch the ball in traffic. Even if that's a fair catch, that he's getting to the ball all the time and he's confident of bringing that ball in with people around is so important. It's the difference between having to gain several more first downs in the game. Field position is so important. So when we look at the typical way which we develop the punt returner, and if I go through, I would say this is true in quite a few programs, you're going to have your specialist period. Maybe it's at the beginning of practice. Maybe it's at some point in the practice, but you're going to give 5 or 10 minutes specifically to the specialist, your snappers, your kickers, your holders, your punters, and your returners to go out and do what they do with the ball without any other part of the scheme in place. So that punter is certainly getting used to catching the ball, but there's no other elements of the game that are there. Then we'll go into our special team period, and we're going to go and run reps. Most of the time, those are not live, so there's not that threat of getting hit. But at the same time, they're limited. We can only get a certain amount of reps if we're going all 11 players, and the setup of those drills just takes longer. So we don't maximize the opportunity for a player to gain confidence if those are the only situations that he's working in. And in order to solve that problem, we have what Andy's going to explain here is the pressure catch drill. And when I think of this, you know, it's funny, thinking of special teams, yesterday listening to the Browns game, and I hear the radio host talk about how there's so many penalties for the Browns, and most of them are in special teams. And then he said, well, a lot of these guys are getting used to playing special teams. They probably didn't do a lot of that at the college level. And I'm thinking, if that's true and we have to work these different aspects of special teams more at the NFL level, how much are we missing out at the high school level that these guys aren't really getting what they need? So I think this is a great opportunity. It's a drill that can be run over and over and over again in large spaces, small spaces, but give more of those reps and more of that game-like feel to our punt return.
I think contested catch is a drill we do a lot with our receivers, and why don't we do that pressure situations with our returners? So, you know, the simple setup here is that we're going to take our returners out, and we're going to take our return group, and the guys that aren't returning are going to act as gunners. So you'll place guys, you know, offset on the angle coming in, and this can only be 5 or 10 yards away, so we're not wasting legs, but they're going to close in on the return man. Now, the other thing that I really like to do is we talk about that vision, decision, action cycle. Not only are there going to be guys coming down under control, obviously, who aren't going to, you know, make contact, but make sure you alter the speeds, the depths, and the angles that our gunners are coming towards our return man. So he's practicing the actual, you know, traffic catch. And part of the traffic of the return man, to me, is scanning the field in front of him and then reaching up and making the catch looking up with his eyes and making the catch, excuse me. So if we just could track the ball the whole time, it would probably be pretty easy. So by having gunners coming in at multiple angles and multiple reps, now he's scanning the field, looking for the thought process of, hey, they're bearing down on me, I need to fair catch this, or hey, they're far away, I can make this catch and then run. And also, which gunner is closest to me am I going to have to avoid? And that's going to go into his decision-making process on the catch. So now when we decide to fair catch it and we see the wave, both of our gunners are going to come up. They're going to respect the, you know, the free catch interference bubble, but they're going to be there as if a real gunner was, hoping for a fumble, hoping for the muff. If we don't get the fair catch, they're going to hold their run so that the guy can catch the ball again. No injuries here, but we start to see that natural difference. So our return man gets his eyes up. He sees who's the immediate threat. Now he processes that into his catching, catches the ball, and makes the proper cut based off of which side of the field he's getting gunner pressure on. I think something as simple as that, just adding reading the field and reading the gunners, makes it a much more difficult catch. And we can do, you know, the clapping games and getting in front of him, and that could be some great confusion. But to me, as a coach, most of the real challenge comes from attempting to do two things at once, reading the field and then making the catch. So let's institute some reading the field dynamics into the catch instead of, you know, just hitting them with pool noodles or things like that, to try to make it a game situation as possible while still stressing his decision making and making that catch contested via either space in the free catch bubble or pressure and quick cuts via the coverage.
That takes us to the special teams portion of this, and special teams can be approached much in the same way as carving out small groups who are working on a particular aspect of the scheme. So, for example, today we want to focus on the kickoff return in the front wall.
When we talk about growth, I think, you know, one of the areas that informs our growth is kind of overload, us being able to challenge the system and grow. So it's really common for our front wall guys to have their count. They're going to count their number, and they're going to, you know, go back. They're going to plant their foot, twirl around, find their threat, and pick him up in that initial block. Well, we also know that guys twist, guys change lanes, and things happen. But if we really want to challenge those front wall guys, you know, we could challenge them with speed by allowing the coverage team to move up. But one of the areas I really like to challenge guys with is the ability to find their block responsibility out of the coverage team. So as we simulate the kick, we're going to have five guys on the coverage team who are all going to be inside the drill space that would mimic where the L5 and L4 would be. Now, when they hit the line, three of them are going to pull off, and only two of them are going to continue down the coverage lane. That means when my player sees the kick simulated, he knows he has five, but he doesn't know which one is five until he sees who pulls off and who continues down the track. This is going to overload his decision-making cycle of being able to get back, find who's the inside-most player, L5 in this situation, and then position himself to make the block. Our tackle in this drill would be doing the same situation, but he's digging inside for L4. He sees five guys hit the line. He has to see which two continue down the track. Then he's going to know the outside most one is going to be L4. He needs to position himself off that. So again, what we're looking for, this overload principle, is to really grow our ability that no matter what happens, what alignment, what twists, what overload the coverage team presents us, our front wall is going to be able to get their depth, find their threat, and pick up their responsible men. And I think that just playing with the eyes, trying to manipulate the vision, can do a great job of making sure our players are really adapting and learning and stretching their ability. So now that when I see what's my count, there's L5, I'm really confident and comfortable in it. And if L4 and L5 run a twist, no matter, I feel comfortable to be able to identify the threat, reposition myself, and make that block.
Andy, I think that's a great approach to this, and I think with any special teams, we need to look to break it out of the box of only doing team reps. I think we can get so much more of that and prepare our players better. I know in coaching kick return at the college level, one of the things we really focused on in getting more out of our time was to break that up into individual periods, as I spoke about before. But as we brought it in together, we would only run certain aspects of that kick return at a time. So initially, I would divide it up between the left side and the right side, and we would run what we call a two whistle drill. It has some advantages in that we can now, as one side's going, work to set up the other side and get them back to get another rep, then the other side goes. The other advantage is, as a coach, I can focus my eyes on what those guys are doing and specifically coaching them up. So I think there's a lot of ways we could think about approaching that and setting up drills in those small group settings that are going to help the overall picture of that scheme. And like we said, you're going to get that growth you need to be able to take your team to a place where that is something they feel confident and proficient in.
No, 100%. And I think that part of the growth from our players probably comes from our growth as coaches. So when we start looking at drills that aren't always going to be clean, whether it's our defend the line drill and our linebacker and our defensive tackle aren't giving us clean looks as far as, you know, the coach saying, you go here and you go here. They're fighting for position. They may be declaring quick or slow to a gap. Our players are developing real life decision making, on field challenge, problem solving. When my linebackers are looking at reading a defensive tackle who's sometimes winning, sometimes losing, an offensive lineman who's sometimes coming up clean or sometimes doing a poor job with his own body position, he's learning. And when we try to manipulate special teams to be able to challenge those guys, a lot of it has to do with our growth as a coach to say these uncontrolled situations, and I don't say uncontrolled meaning maniac collisions, but uncontrolled as far as we don't know what the result will be until the play starts to develop. That's the real read our players are going to have on game day. And when we start embracing that and giving that to our players in the practice field, you know, the carryover to our team periods and to our game day should hopefully be much higher.
And when we look at the special teams aspect, Andy, I think this is a great opportunity to find ways for our kickers to compete. And a lot of times, again, I go back to the traditional setup of special teams a lot. But you know, what guys have learned is you throw your one unit out there and maybe you go back and forth between two kickers. Maybe you're, you know, as you get into it, your one kicker is only getting work. And it's something that really doesn't give us an insurance plan and cover us if something happens to that number one kicker. So the idea with this is to use a half line, real rush half line, and to get more reps out of it for that kicker. The idea, and we used to call this the kicking wheel, we could do it with two full teams at the college level, but we would have one team going on one hash, the other going on the opposite hash, and get a full rush against them as we would start moving them back and then switch kickers across the hash. Well, again, high school level, you might not have the setup for complete two full teams, but now you can work your skill guys in this equation, your long snapper, your holder, and your kicker, both ones and twos, in a very competitive situation. And a lot of times that younger kicker is your JV kicker. He's somebody who it's not his time on Friday nights yet, but now we start to give him more real game reps, real feel, game-like reps, and he can get better in those situations.
No, and oftentimes the standard way of trying to put pressure on a kicker is betting sprints or practices over, or, you know, we get a free night when it comes down to the preseason camp, but nothing is going to, you know, really influence him like a full rush. And the half line drill is great because we really get to compete. We really get to get a full rush, but we also can take some precautions, we'll say, within the rush by only going half line. We don't have to worry about guys coming from the other side. We don't have to worry about an accidental collision. We can focus with smaller numbers, which allows the coaches to control and see a little bit more, but get full pressure and really put something on the line with these guys, you know, like we like to do, where you make the little fun bets between offense and defense, or what each blocked kick or each missed field goal is worth in terms of, you know, something as simple as one push-up, or, you know, we used to bet songs. The losing team would have to sing a song, just a little something to add some spice to it.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, again, I like the pressure situations. I like creating the situations where there is something on the line, but also competing for sprints is a heck of a lot different than when there's a rush coming at you. And I do like the half line rush. you don't get those situations where guys cross paths and run into each other or potentially run in or thrown into the kicker or the holder. And we want to protect our guys. And you can go back and forth between this is a live rep and, you know, this is to the fit to be able to take some contact out of it. Or potentially you just go to the fit and send a rusher who might be unblocked off the edge to put that pressure on to maintain, you know, your levels of contact and the contact time that you have available according to your state rules.
No, that's a great point. And what you can do is you can work to the fit on the live side. And because the fit side is going to not be collapsing the pocket, you can send a couple rushers from the open side to be distractors. And so there's a whole bunch of ways to get multiple reps, challenge all sides, and make sure your kicker is kicking with traffic and noise in front of him. But the kind of noise and traffic that's going to be in the game, you know, you could have the coach blowing a whistle in his ear and you're betting your sprints on it. Or you can actually say, hey, we're going to put three guys on the open side. They're going to be allowed to come down the line. We tell them, you know, that they're not going to hit the ball, but that's some true eye manipulation. Or we can remove the guys from the open side and say, hey, rush side, you're live. Let's go get one. And that's important work for the defense to get too. While you do have to watch your collision count, it is important work for them to get, you know, really good efforts on trying to split the gaps, trying to get that job done. Because there's going to be a time during the year where you need a blocked kick to either seal a victory or to win the game. And if it's only ever been practiced from the offensive side or versus inferior opponents, those guys might not be ready to really hit a gap and get it done in crunch time.
Thanks for listening to our Best of Deliberate Practice Special Teams Edition. We hope you take some of these skills and drills and apply them to your team's units. If you would like to hear more, check out our Deliberate Practice Series playlist on SoundCloud. Also, make sure to follow our Twitter account at FBDEVCoach for all our latest content. And be sure to check out footballdevelopment.com for our systems on blocking, tackling, and defeating blocks.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.